All right, I think we are live. Let's do this. Good morning, good afternoon. Excited about this chat. So this is the 26th space in adopting Bitcoin, a combo with Galloway. We have a great guest today, Pete Nguyen, and we'll kind of get into maybe how we got connected and everything else. The block height is 741992. And just for folks who are newer, this is a series of conversations that we have with people pushing forward Lightning, community leaders, and thoughtful individuals driving sort of Bitcoin as money, which is our mission at Galloway. This conversation specifically, I'm excited about because we want to get into the idea of community banking, how Bitcoin and community banking relate, and then what that enables for the future, some ideas about P2P capital markets and everything else. And so Pete, welcome to the show this morning. I'll maybe shut up and let you do just a basic intro, and for the folks listening now or listening later, we've had Pete, myself, Kamal, who's running technical side right now, I've had many conversations over the past couple months, and we decided to kind of change it up and open one up for others to watch because we've been talking about some interesting things. So it'll be a probably a wide ranging conversation. But as I mentioned before, Mike, can you hear me, Pete? Can you hear me?
You've just gone quiet to me.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you, but you sound like a robot. I don't know if that's just me.
Okay, let me try to fix this. Turn off my. How about now? Still.
You still sound like a robot. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah,
Oh, there you go.
let me retake my headphones. My cell phone tr interrupted my connection.
Okay. Thank God we're not live.
Check. Good.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
All right, sorry about that. I need to turn on airplane mode. My cell phone tries to take my headphones. The last thing I was going to mention was we wanted to use this conversation as a bit of a lightning rod for others in the space who are interested in the things that we're going to touch on. We'll touch on a few different things. We have some things going in GitHub, and so if as things come up that are interesting to anybody, please find us on chat.galley.io and on Twitter, et cetera. So, Pete, anyway, welcome. Love to hear, have you give a little bit of an introduction.
It's interesting, right? You said of the whole run sheet of the conversation that we had and all the different topics that we might look at. I've been racking my brains all day about various things I might talk about, and I just completely skipped over the intro and thinking about how I might do that. So I guess I'll just ramble into it.
Gotcha.
I would probably describe myself as a maybe like a random Bitcoin player who's been interested in Bitcoin for, I don't know, but 4 or 5 years at this point that I really got into it. One of the areas that I have been really interested in for several years has been community banking, mainly because I was interested in
One of the
community
areas
banking
that I saw
have
in
been really
Bitcoin
interested in for
anyway.
certain, and then learning more and more about Bitcoin, I just see that there's a lot of good applications to solve some real problems that we might have in society using the tools that we have in the bag with Bitcoin, just to make various things a little bit more free and a little bit more peer-to-peer, and just to flatten some of the institutions that we have right now. I don't think we need centralized monoliths in control of everything, and the more we can do for each other, the better. So I'm all about building that. So obviously we've been talking for, I don't know, maybe like a couple of months now, I guess, since we first touched base to about what we might do. I've recently left a job with a a larger corporation in order to focus more on freedom technology. So that's why I'm here. So I'm still trying to feel it out, kind of new to just trying to get into the open source space and how all that works. But I think the best thing to do is to just jump in and start contributing what you can. That's what I'm told. So that's what I'm trying to do. Yeah.
Awesome. Yes, we were connected by Bosch. in Bitcoin Design Slack, right? And so it was good to make that connection. Staying sort of in the some of the intro and some of your background, what is it about community banking and or your past that draws you to the community banking idea?
I guess it probably came. I used to have a startup called KarmaPay, which unfortunately didn't work out as well as I might have hoped. But it was broadly based on the idea of a payments network that whenever you made a payment, instead of fees being taken and going to a faceless bank, the idea was we funneled that money directly into projects over in Cambodia, and we were using it to build schools. And then every time you had a coffee, the local coffee shop, you got attached to a donation that went to a specific school or of a project. And then over time, we were building this like really tight sort of feedback loop that just sort of said, like, okay, well, that long Mac, this school and these smiling children, that latte, look at this landmine field that we've cleared over here. And it was just this almost like a behavioral sort of aspect. And just say, look, I think if you can do that, then you've got to be an odd person to say, oh, I'll just use Visa. I don't want to use the tool that, solves poverty, educates people. So that was the plan with that tool. But unfortunately, it was built on a lot of just traditional rails. And it was just too difficult from a funding perspective to get that over that sort of chasm of hell, or whatever, I can't remember what it's called in startup parlance. And it ended up just taking too much money, and I had to fold it and go back to work, unfortunately. But that really got me interested in the idea of, like, what can you do in the finance space, and how can you make little changes to then alter where money goes and how money's spent. And one of the particular problems we had in that project was always going to be, what do you do with the money, and how do you make sure it's clear where the money's going, so that there's not this sort of fraud allegation that might hang around something like that. And so, it just sort of got me interested in talking to a lot of people about, community banking and things like that. Now, one of the guys that I met, and we've had an ongoing conversation in this area for about 3 years now, really just looking at how could we do something similar to that, but localized back in Australia? Because this guy happens to be a big sort of, I guess, he's a big voice in Australia around small and medium enterprise. And it's a big area of his that he believes that we've just kind of like hollowed out that sector of the economy. And like some of the reasons behind that are just, from my point of view, you kind of come back to the kind of banking system we've got and the cheap debt culture, where if you happen to be very large or very, very big, you can get debt at 0%. Whereas if you're a small business with like one or two different operations and you're trying to get going, well, you might get debt at 5 to 10%. And there's just a huge difference in what you can do. And then I think over time, we've just seen that kind of evisceration of the high street and that whole layer of society where all of this like entrepreneurship on a local level has gone away. And the only stuff that remains is big businesses just cookie cuttering themselves like all over the world, plus people trying to become monopolies in startup world. And when I was talking to this guy, like, we both had this like, I don't know, just an intuition that that was kind of wrong, and that there's something quite beautiful in business, that when you can create something that people really want and you can then run a profit off that, it gives you this power to keep doing it and to keep making an impact on the world, and you can scale it, and it doesn't rely on just the good grace of something or other, like kind of, conscience laundering itself to give you money to keep it going. It's just you can actually just have a good impact. So I got kind of interested in social enterprise and various different things around that time as well. So, but those conversations that like, kept evolving. And what I've been discussing with that guy was around like, how could we start a kind of bank that is there to support the local economy? Like, how do we go back to the kind of 1960s era bank where you used to have a bank manager, and the bank manager knew, the hairdresser and the pharmacist and the pubs and, the nail salon or the garage and all that stuff. And he would, you'd go to the bank to talk about an idea, to get some some information around, well, what do you think is actually required? Like, what are people talking to you about? Like, there's this role where there's information there about, okay, well, where's the best place to put the capital? And so we were looking at this notion of like, well, could you have like a smaller, more localized capital exchange where people around the community then reinvest back into their own communities as they go? And obviously, like the sort of payment flow I talked about in Karma Pay, I think works very nicely with that as well. I've always been meaning to redo that on Bitcoin at some point, but it was just, I felt like it had to be on Lightning and it had to be stable value. So, like, congratulations, Galore, you've done a lot of the work for that. So that's something to look into. But maybe we'll get into that later. But I think something like that, again, is a good way of then generating funds. But then where do those funds go? How do you spend them? So again, that comes back to the community bank idea of like, just, you know, there's two words in community bank, and one of them is important, and it's community. You know, the bank is just like, okay, yeah, there's some money that we need to manage, but it's the community aspect of that that makes it into an important institution that says, okay, well, there's this geographical region or this particular group or niche of people that want to come together. Like, how do we do something good with that money and how do we improve our lives? And I do think there's a lot of different things we can do on top of that model. If we can look at a world where we've got, you know, a country with 10,000 banks, then, you know, there's this raw competition that's going on there where those banks are competing for any particular person's attention, for any particular person's money. And so I think you start to see banks look at how they can offer services to facilitate things less than just being a custody warehouse that takes your money and uses it for its own ends. So I'll maybe stop there for a minute, but yeah, that's sort of how I ended up getting interested in it. And then, as you can imagine, you add Bitcoin to it and think, ooh, lots of ideas come up.
Yeah. And I think, you know, this is one of the, probably one of the reasons why, you know, the conversations we've had are really exciting, because you've done a lot of thinking about a world where community banking has been reintroduced on Bitcoin. You know, Galloway, you know, we build open source Bitcoin banking infrastructure, right? Which, for those unfamiliar, you know, the Bitcoin Beach wallet, you know, a lot of people know it as a Lightning wallet. But really the idea is that it is a community bank built on Bitcoin. And so it's a custodial Lightning wallet with, sort of a multi-signature, cold storage underneath, where, you know, individuals within the community holding access to those funds. And the thing that I think one of the problems it solves is onboarding, right? And so, you're enabling people to use Bitcoin over the Lightning Network without worrying about channels, without worrying about seed phrases. And you know, I actually listened to the Farida on John Vallis pod that you mentioned yesterday. And she mentioned something that, you know, comes up over and over again, which is individuals, you know, the 2 billion people unbanked around the world are not thinking about Bitcoin as a store of value at the beginning. Right, they're using the network as a means of digital, you know, enabling digital transactions, of enabling connecting to the rest of the world, right? And so what we've seen with, you know, Bitcoin Beach Wallet and other wallets built on Galloway is that it is extremely good for as an on ramp to Bitcoin, right? For people that have not orange pilled themselves through hundreds of hours of learning, but rather somebody who comes to a local community event or a farmer's market and says like, hey, do you want to try receiving and spending sats, right? Like it's a great open door to that. And the thing that I think, you know, excites me about these conversations, the potential here is that, you know, Galloway is building and sort of leading the development of an open source like platform, which anybody can use. We saw Costa Rica, build the Bitcoin Jungle wallet, a couple of developers in Costa Rica, rather, not the country. And then the thinking is that, today we have 50,000 financial institutions in the world. In the future, it could be millions, I think, to your point of, you know, town at the town level, at the city level, at the companies having, wallets who are really like building features or selling propositions on top and really competing for the business, the funding from their respective, like either physical community or digital community. And then the vision that I think is extremely exciting is like, what does the economy built on top of an open Bitcoin banking sort of standard look like? And the team in Costa Rica recently at Bitcoin Jungle recently redesigned the maps tab on Bitcoin Beach Wallet, which today it's like there's pins on a map that show you where you can spend Bitcoin, and they've recommended they've designed some features where it basically Yelp meets Craigslist, where if you're a restaurant or a small business, you can like post your business there, images, hours, other things, and then if you're somebody who wants to sell a chair for Bitcoin, you could actually post a listing, and that is just in early days, just one of many potential features or add-ons that could come into this sort of like open Bitcoin standard over time. And so when we talk about, I do want to touch on stable bonds, that the work that you had done, and stable sats, which we can hint at a little bit, and then the P2P capital market side, because as I mentioned at the top of the call, I see a little bit of this call as a bit of a lightning rod to say like, hey, like what are the possibilities for things that could be enabled or accelerated if they were built on top of sort of like a Bitcoin community banking model. So anyway, I said a lot there. I'll maybe shut up for a second.
I think there's an interesting theme across those about just real economies, right? It's even the what you mentioned about selling a chair, that's a real, it's a real transaction that's happening. It's not like some sort of bullshit speculation wrapped in a token of bullshit speculation. It's a real thing that somebody's exchanging money for, and I think that's where we need to get with Bitcoin. And in my mind, at least, I think the sort of community banking is the sort of like, well, if we're going to onboard like whole geographical areas into Bitcoin, there need to be these sort of focal points and these institutions that do the support and the guidance and assist with, the custody aspects, if that's what you're going to do. Ideally, we can limit the amount of custody that they have and privacy aspects around that, which maybe we'll get into the 30-minute stuff at some point. But I think, they need help with that, and they need to facilitate that market. Like, markets don't just, well, they do kind of naturally occur, but they naturally occur because people go and make them. So when I'm thinking about community banks, I'm not necessarily thinking about, oh, I'm a bank and I just want 10% of all the bitcoins. I'm thinking about, the, as you say, like the 4, 5, 10 million tiny organizations that are all over the place that are kind of just facilitating services and economies on top of Bitcoin. So the things that really get me interested are the kind of, peer-to-peer sales markets that you could build on top of it. It's the, peer-to-peer investment and lending markets that we could do. Like that, I think, is a really interesting use case. And it's the community bank aspect of that is not that you should have to do it through a community bank, but that maybe if you have that fabric of banks everywhere that are acting as these institutions that bring together a whole community and build like a real world trust model, then maybe we can layer on top of that. Because what Bitcoin is great at is money for enemies at a distance, right? It's, I could send you money right now using Bitcoin, but I won't, because I might not get it back, and I want all the Bitcoin, So that's, yeah, I'll go on there. But like there's places to invest. Like, we'll move towards the peer-to-peer capital stuff, right? But it's, we talked about this in the last meeting, but something like a Doug Casey or a Jim Rogers, who've made their careers in investing, in crisis investing money into places where everybody thought they were insane to put money. There's a good reason why they do well out of that. And it's because places where people think you're insane to put money tend to have better growth over the next sort of 20 years. And it's people think you're insane to put money in, and it's hard to put money there. There's not many guarantees around it, so you get the outsized returns. But on the ground, you have many people that are actually trying to have a crack at things. and they're trying to start businesses and they're solving real needs within that community, but they don't have what we would have over here in the West, about the access to more of those capital markets to make it happen quicker or to grow quicker and whatnot. And so I do think that there's a real sort of problem that Bitcoin solves here. So, I mean, you mentioned about the Nicholas on SLP the other day, on Stefan Levera's podcast, where he talked about the guy who was in France, was from like CAR, I think, originally, and he wanted to reinvest into there because he could see this like massive growth potential that he'd have, but just couldn't get physically money into the community. Right? How do I get it? I can't, like the French are just there going, no, it's not happening. Right. But then, enter Bitcoin, and Bitcoin just comes on the scene like the Kool-Aid guy, knocks down the wall, and it doesn't care. Right. He just goes straight around any of those sanctions. Now we have that facility that at a distance, we can get money into a place where it might be required. You know, Bitcoin is Bitcoin, and that's great. We can put money there. You know, we also have things like cryptography, so we can do things to assure ourselves of what's going on in certain situations, or make attestations to various facts and things that are going on. So maybe there's something there that we can use to kind of solve some of this distance gap. But I mean, to me, if I'm going to go and invest in a business over in El Salvador, the thing that's on my mind is why do I think I'm ever going to get the money back? And so maybe I would, and microfinancing is a thing. The site we were looking at the other day, the Kiva thing, that's done $1.5 billion in financing for the thing. Well, why not do it on Bitcoin? Yeah, it's just so I think there is this model where you can look at, well, what does Bitcoin do for peer-to-peer financing of, say, small and local businesses? So could you have, for instance, a restaurant in El Salvador? So it's El Salvador is a great case because they're making the laws clear and they like Bitcoin. It kind of gives us a better legal footing to do something like this. We go, okay, well, maybe I'm interested in investing there. And they're so Bitcoin friendly that, a lot of Bitcoiners now have a good incentive to make the country better. Going, okay, look, if they've got problems and they need money and they can get over those problems, then maybe we can help them. Maybe we can supply the capital. So you've got to think that there's going to be a lot of different businesses that could set up. This is in many ways, the nature of the whole volcano bond is, all right, well, we need money to repair things. Let's go and get some money in and we're going to use it and we'll build this stuff. But that's a very like centralized, top-down view of the thing. It's the president saying, we will get it as a country. I will dictate what to do. I think as we kind of joked, like the first time they got some money from Bitcoin, they built a pet hospital. Now, I don't know what the situation is on the ground, but I don't know if a pet hospital was just like the keystone that needed to be built on that bridge. Maybe it was, I'm not to say, but I just have a strong feeling that the individuals and the businesses in the various towns probably know what they need to build, be it sort of restaurants, security companies, pharmacists, like whatever it is. The bank can help you decide what that thing is. So we go back to our restaurant model and say, look, you could imagine something like to do that. Got my capital investment to actually get the thing up and running. And then I've got to, like foot the operational expenses every month. Well, maybe it's easier for me to do this if I could get a line of credit that just pays my OPEX every month prior to them making all the sales for the food and drink that I'm going to be selling. So maybe I could structure a loan that says, all right, Andrew, here's my terms. If you pay me X US dollars over 1%, and that's going to equate to, this percentage of the take on the till. And then what you could have is the community bank could intermediate that deal, because how do you find it? Well, you don't know, but you could go to El Zonte Capital. Well, it's not Max. I guess it's Lante Bank, and they could make the introduction facilitate. You say, look, yeah, it's good business. We've checked it out. They know what they're doing. It is going to work. They've already got another one that worked, but yeah, they need the capital for that. Now, it could be that the bank also runs, for instance, the merchant terminals in there. So instead of making this something where you're then trusting that the payment gets made, you can actually build it into the merchant terminal. Which means that then now instead of me, I front the cost for the month. Over the course of the month, I get X percentage of the till thing that's coming back into me, and I get the loan paid, and I go, fantastic, I'll do it again. what you've effectively got there is just somebody having a loan that's made on a monthly basis to cover operational expenses, that's probably a small yield, but a yield nonetheless, that's getting paid back to me. And then when I get that, I go, fantastic, I'll just do that again, and I'll keep it going, and we could have this as an ongoing relationship. So we've done a couple of things there to limit our exposure to the default. So we didn't give 12 months of money up front. We structured it so it was on like a month-by-month basis, which seems sensible. We leveraged the trust of the community bank to say, to pre-check, you know, like what are the projects or the investments in the area that make sense? You know, what passes the sniff test of these guys will probably be able to repay? You know, we also then have that community bank that can act as the merchant terminal inside those businesses as well. So we can actually then, at the point of sale, start capturing some of that income that's coming back as well. So we get a view of, like, you know, well, what's actually going on with the finances, and then the bank can help understand, you know, what's actually going on the ground. Do we think all of that money's coming back? Great. You get, you know, you Martaway would get that flow of Satoshis coming back to you, so you can see that there's actually some action on that. And then you've got the monthly sort of call where you say, okay, well, yes or no, am I going to advance the next month to this business? And I think something like that, you know, it's not going to be the same for something like commercial real estate or just like retail real estate, but you just have slightly different terms in how you structure the loan. But Bitcoin just allows us to do this stuff at a distance by making the finances simple and easy and transferable. And I think the other aspect that you add with something like Galoi is, well, how can you stabilize the value? Because if I make a loan like that in Bitcoin, well, now I've just inherited a whole bunch of volatility that I don't want. And as has the person in the restaurant, they probably don't want that volatility as well. So if they're operating in US dollars, well, maybe it would be better for me to acquire US dollars and make the loan in US dollars than it would be to try and loan out Bitcoin. So, you know, instead I say, okay, well, I'll make this loan for you. I come buy US dollars on Bitcoin. Which are you, like, what's the situation with the Galoi implementation at the moment? Are you talking about that out loud? Or?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, Nicholas, all right. You know, Nicholas did a full presentation on, and maybe Kamal can, you know, share a link in the YouTube or whatever, so we don't, that, you know, anybody interested can go into depth there. But Nicholas went on Stefan Lavera, talked about this, and also there was a Bolt Fund hackathon earlier this year where he walked through sort of step by step what we're doing. The short version of which is using derivatives contracts to provide a synthetic mm-hmm. dollar in Bitcoin Beach wallet. So you know, from a user perspective, I am the cafe owner in El Sante, and when I receive money, I can actually receive in that synthetic dollar, or in Bitcoin. There's no stable coin, right? It's sats. Yeah. And also, if I have commitments, say I have rent and my suppliers to pay, you know, I can just, within the same wallet, I don't have to cash out of Bitcoin to local currency wherever I may be. I can just move my sats into my dollar equivalent account, and then they stay, as is, and are not exposed, allowing the people on the ground who, like I mentioned, are using Bitcoin not as store value, as you know, they're using this for daily, as money and daily purchases, enable some of the stability, which is a massive challenge, right? And I mean, conversations all over the place about different ways people are trying to solve this.
I think that's a really good service. That's, again, is it's facilitated by the bank. It would be complex for me to do this in a direct peer-to-peer relationship with somebody in a different country, but with that bank available there, I can send a Bitcoin and it becomes a dollar denominated loan and it's paid back in dollars at a particular set rate. Now, if I have my own community bank over here that's doing the same thing for me, or maybe I hedge it myself, or maybe I just sell the Bitcoin or whatever I want to do, you know, I can manage my own exposure in that way. But the beauty of Bitcoin is that it is everywhere and it is open. So there's nothing that stops me just sending the Bitcoin over there to fund a dollar-denominated loan and then getting the yield on that. So I don't think you could do that simply without the bank. So I think you have the conversion into the US dollars to actually make it a more reasonable, usable loan. I think you've got the community vetting aspects of the bank to, what are the right places to put the money and how do we know which ones are going to work? And then you kind of have the, I guess, like soft enforcement aspects of, that bank is in the community. So it's one thing for somebody, like 10,000 miles away to default on a loan to some nobody in Australia that they're never going to see again. It's another thing to default when you've worked that loan through your local community bank in the community who's supporting everybody else inside that community. That's now a dick move. And so your risk of default is going to go way down just on that. And then I think there's some other things that you could look at doing around, post having the bank post some of the capital as a bond against maybe some of the larger investments that might take longer to mature and things like that, that would make it simple. But it's because we have this flexible open platform in Bitcoin, we can do that and we can do multi-sig and we can have the sort of federated ownership of the assets, which makes a lot of those things interesting. So,
Yeah,
yeah,
you said yesterday Bitcoin is trustless to an extent, but let's not throw away being human, which I had to write down, which is great, right? Just because like we have something
Yeah.
trustless does not mean that is that we're gonna program our entire existence into a smart contract or something like that.
Yeah,
Like
it's
there
fine.
is
It's fine being human. I'm all for it.
being human's good. One other thing I wanted to comment on is this idea that you mentioned, like this is a model which is probably more suited for the smaller business, sort of small and medium-sized business in these communities. And I think that like there's something to be said about that. And I mean, there's sort of layers to sort of Bitcoin adoption and what you see in like, I live in the States, right? And like people. It's harder for people that I run into on a daily basis to understand Bitcoin because they don't have the problems that Bitcoin solves, or at least they don't know they have them, or they're not in as much pain, from some of these problems. Whereas like you listen to Chimbara down in El Zante and he's like, digital transactions for the first time, the ability to access an asset for the first time, the ability to interact in the the global economy, and there's these massive things, and so probably some of the larger businesses or wherever they are in the world have access, right, and to loans, and whereas like this ability to create this sort of the P2P capital market on top of a community bank is like can I mean, I don't know how many businesses around the world this could sort of change the game for, where they could never really, step up a level into growing a business, or like you mentioned in our conversation yesterday, going from one cafe to two cafes, right? Because it's just not possible to earn enough profit, right? On your own to necessarily open that. And then the last thing, which I wanted to kind of, this is making me really think about, is that I don't know if you've seen much of the what News Story has been doing down in El Salvador and El Zante as well. Is so they build, I think their sort of their whole mission is pioneering solutions to end homelessness, global homelessness. Yep. And so they're building homes in El Zante and elsewhere in El Salvador and I mean around the world. But the homes that they built in El Zante, people moving in are paying. So part of the home is donated, and then part of the home that the homeowner will be paying back on a mortgage with Bitcoin. And in learning about how they operate and how they're providing the access to homeownership to people who would otherwise never not be able to get a loan, right, to get a mortgage, to buy a home, right? And a lot of that has to do with things that are just relics of the traditional system, right? Which is creditworthiness or even like access to, so you're having to send people out to collect money, right? To somebody without a bank account. Like there's so many blockers for so many people in the world to access things like a mortgage or like a loan that like When we talk about this ability to use Bitcoin on top of community banks, it's like I think it can open up like really, it really comes back to the ideas that, they talk about like hope, ability to dream, ability to think about the future, right? Like it's more than like just the loan aspect of it, which I, it's really,
Yeah,
really
definitely.
big.
It's, I mean, I think that's a reasonable use case to say that you, and I do think there's going to be a kind of like wellspring of almost, it's kind of, I mean, I think we talk about it's like kind of philanthropy, but like hyper-capitalist sort of thing. You go like, oh, you know, I've got some capital here and I want to do something with it. Well, like maybe there's a place to use it over here, which gets me X, and what I can do it over here in El Salvador is Y. But fuck it, I want to see that work. So it's almost like a little bit of like philanthropy mixed in with the investment thesis there, where you're kind of like, yeah, I'd send money. I would buy that. I'd buy a mortgage product that allows me to help out people in El Salvador get access to, you know, better housing. That's what's being sold. I'd consider that as a good investment. I'd look at that and go, yeah, that ticks my, you know, vaguely millennial, though I might be slightly old for that sort of view of what I'd like to do something with my money that I think improves the place. You know, that's why I'm in Bitcoin. It's because I want to take the corruption out of money so we can build a better world. Like, so
It's
if I can
the
fast track it by just doing it, then yeah, let's get on it. Like, I think there's a lot of that where, and you know, as we said, like something like CAR or El Salvador or small places, and, you know, compared to Bitcoin just a few months ago, used to be quite a big, rich sort of place. And then, you know, you can imagine that there would be a lot of capital there that just wants to go and be used, you know. And I know Bitcoiners do love to just sit on their Bitcoin, but it's not weird for people to want to spend money on making things better. We've only got limited time on Earth, so I think I'd love to see some of those markets start to develop. I think that would be fantastic.
It's the incentive alignment like at it again. I mean, adopting Bitcoin, which was in El Salvador last November and is going to be in El Salvador again this November, quick shill, adoptingbitcoin.org, is the idea of that summit, that conference, came up because our founder Nicholas and Moritz from Spectre and some others were down in El Salvador about maybe the halfway point between the Bitcoin law being announced and the Bitcoin law going into effect. And there was this realization that was like, we Bitcoiners around the world, like everybody like jumped up for joy and cheered at this like amazing announcement. But on the ground, like things are not moving as fast and as thoroughly maybe as they need to kind of prepare the country. Like adopting Bitcoin is a pretty large thing that has many different tentacles to it. And so there's education at the individual level, there's education at the organizational level. They were meeting with some banks in the area, and so they said, well, we need to have a conference. We need to refocus the attention of Bitcoiners on El Salvador, because this is a community effort. Like if we want Bitcoin to succeed, it is in everybody's interest to come to the place where it's legal tender, to understand what's happening, to spend Bitcoin here, to build together, to really understand the solutions that need to be built here. So and then the other thing is, I the whole HODL thing, like HODLing is great. Also like sharing, or I guess I say like I see it like not as necessarily like spending my Bitcoin, but like spreading Bitcoin, right? If we're going to orange pill a business, I've actually been talking a lot with Esteban from St. Petersburg, who's doing a great job of orange pilling businesses and locals. And it's like, if you're going to orange pill a business, like you need to then spend Bitcoin. You need to get people to spend Bitcoin at that business. Like this is a bit of a flywheel that needs to happen. And so I think that investing in these opportunity, investing in these like loans and bettering places around the world, is yeah, again, it's all aligned toward our same vision, I believe, of bringing Bitcoin to the world.
I mean, I think it's appealing to maybe the more generic maxi view. You know, if you were to take, Giacomo talks a lot about hard money and dark money. I think it's, I have a sneaky suspicion that in the next sort of 5 to 10 years, we might really appreciate it if we have some well-developed gray markets in the world that we have. And I think those gray markets are going to run on Bitcoin. And so I think it behooves us to take the time right now to just go to the places where it's perfectly legal and legit to build what those markets would look like, just get them out there, because it could be that they'll be real lifesavers to a lot of people over the course of the next 10 years. So that's maybe my talking code a bit, but I mean that's the sort of more, like rah-rah, we don't like banks sort of view of just like, look, let's we need markets, we need people trading, we need people helping each other. That's what trade is. It's just a bunch of people coming together and exchanging so they each come off better. So let's make it easier to do that because we're not doing loads of it right now. So let's get that up and running in any way we can. And if we've got a place that gives us legal clarity and makes it simpler to do it international, allows us to do it over the internet, then let's take full advantage of that. And then let's take the learnings from that, build it all open source so it can be replicated wherever it's required. I think that's quite a noble aim. So we should be doing that as fast as we can.
Let's go.
Yeah.
I think and I'll bring a couple things up here in a minute, but one of the things that it, so you added, actually I'll do it right now, to kind of show a couple of our spaces where we are trying to have these conversations, or at least trying to focus energy. And so on the Galloway GitHub, which is slash Galloway Money on GitHub, you added a so we've been using discussions within the Galloway repo to try and be a bit of an intake mechanism for, actually I'll zoom out for a second here, for, I mean, things that should exist in terms of open Bitcoin banking, right? And so some of them are more straightforward, enabling any currency to be displayed, like in a Bitcoin Beach wallet or a Galloway wallet. NFC, right? NFC is very popular right now, whether you're doing it via a sticker, or a Bolt card, or some of these other things. And so this is where we're starting to, and I mentioned earlier that Bitcoin Jungle designed a marketplace feature for the app called Mercado, and we did a review there. But Pete, you hopped in and you added some thoughts here. Also, you're at GitHub at Humans Institute, and so yeah, Humans Institute. And so for anybody watching and interested, I would say just like find these repos, star them, pay attention, add your comments and thoughts, because I think that what we're trying to do here is to really imagine like what the potential is for people on a Bitcoin banking on a Bitcoin standard with open source Bitcoin banking. And so I'll maybe turn it over back to you and see is there any additional thinking you want to add regarding this discussion that you posted up the other day? I can either like stay here or go towards through to the issue you added on your own.
Now maybe what might be interesting is I'm one problem that I felt I had with helping out or engaging in open source stuff was just I'm not really a developer. I mean, as we discussed, I did spend a few weeks just teaching myself to code so I could at least, build a pig game. That was good. But it's not being a developer, you feel like there's nothing that you can add. But I have spent the last few years just getting really interested in various aspects of the building blocks in Bitcoin and just sort of logically thinking about different things that could be built. But it's, like just coming up to a project and going, oh, you should build this. It feels like you're just being a bit cheeky. So I guess what I wanted to start doing was to say like there's things that I often think would be great if they existed, And you know, I have ideas for the various different things. So maybe if I just start documenting them and like getting them out there open source, then somebody will build them. I don't mind. I would probably build it open source myself anyway if I had the time and the ability to do that. So yeah, I think coming at it from that angle of saying like there is, I think there is a space for people that, you know, I a lot of my career was spent in actually managing large teams and doing the sort of product development and architecture of solutions and how they fit into that broader business context, which I don't know how much desire there is for that in open source projects, but I thought I'm just gonna start anyway, and we'll see where we go. Because again, something like this, this problem of like, well, how would you construct a peer-to-peer lending market internationally on top of Bitcoin isn't necessarily a technical problem. The technical aspects of that are reasonably easy. You send some Bitcoin to somebody, and over time they're going to send it back. You know, the more interesting aspects of this are, well, what are all the different risks? And like, what are the operational processes on each side? And then how are you going to mitigate those risks inside those processes? So I think thinking through from those angles of like the kind of risk aspect of the operation and what's going on is kind of interesting. And so that's what I was looking to start detailing here. So it's pretty new. I haven't had much a lot of chance to get stuck into it at the moment, but I think the big risk in this is the credit default. It's like, well, aren't they just going to take your money? How do we defend against that? And I think that's where the community bank comes in. But maybe do you want to, like, another example is like the next tab that you've got there, which is on the stable bonds piece. So this was done in response to a conversation with some of the Welsh Bitcoiners. So I've got a really good soft spot for the Welsh. My wife's Welsh, and I love it over there. It's a lovely spot. But yeah, and again, the question was, you know, like, how could the country of Wales defect from England and start running its own Welsh pound? But it had to be something that was unseizable. And there was a lot of talk about, you know, like an asset on liquid or something. Well, it's not really that unseizable if it's just in a bank and you're using the token. You need a derivative. And so the question was like, well, what would it look like to build that? And what's the most peer-to-peer version of that? And so this was kind of done not in the same way that you guys were doing it at Galois, like we weren't talking in any way, but happened to come to similar conclusions that, you know, you pack it in a derivatives market. I think what I'm suggesting here is the development of more of a peer-to-peer based market with a discovery mechanism. So in my mind, the sort of stable bond market there would be something more akin to a platform like a Nostr or something like that, where you could just exchange bid offers for people to discover each other. And then on that, we make these one-for-one pegs. So you match the long and the short inside that market, and you write the DLC against that. Now, the bond aspect of this comes from just suggesting that I think what we should look to do is to just limit the amount of time that hedge runs for, and then seek to roll those contracts, because you do have some risks about, you know, if you have like one person going 1x long and one going 1x short, if you dump 50% in a day, you can blow out the long, and then all of a sudden the short is surprise caught with, oh no, I own Bitcoin again, not dollars, which I thought I did. But I guess the concept behind it was always just, I think it's better to just give individuals a tool to hedge their own risk than it is to sort of give them a token that claims to hedge the risk, but in actual fact has a bunch of other risks that they're not really taking account of. Like, I mean, because we just saw from something like the UST blow up, which is used quite extensively apparently over in Argentina, you know, it's not necessarily great. You know, I get the idea and why people would want to use the tokens, but for me, if you want something that's going to be censorship resistant and you want it to operate in Afghanistan, something like that, then you need it running on Bitcoin rails. Now, the interesting thing is this, is that you could now, on this sort of system, you could start a market in Afghanistan where people operate entirely on Bitcoin, but just happen to store all their money in US dollars, despite the fact that there are no US dollars in the country, and there's no access to necessarily, you know, maybe they're banned from USDC and various other whitelists that are going to get put on over time. It doesn't matter. All you need to make it happen is a slightly degenerate Bitcoiner somewhere else in the world that wants to go long. And I feel like, you know, the last 10 years have told us that we don't have a shortage of slightly degenerate Bitcoiners that want to go long. They appear to be aggressively everywhere. Like, unfortunately, past, when we have these
degenerate plans. Into psychopath, we've been gifted the psychopath name, which is maybe one step beyond a degenerate.
Yeah. So again, this is not something that's in active development at the moment. This is more just like, this is a design pattern for how we could start to solve some of these things. I mean, one thing I've just started to kick off on the Bitcoin design Slack the other day was to start looking at, again, speaking to this concept of, I think in Bitcoin, there's a bit that I think might be useful, which is that there's technical projects. We've now got the design team. So there's a lot of like design and UX work that's been getting done. I still think there's this broader sort of kind of business architecture piece that isn't always there, and I think could be very useful. So, you know, it's not always immediately obvious. Let's say you're an open source project and you've developed a wallet and you're fantastic. I've got all these users. We got some funding from people that helped us get here. You know, how do I get to being a sustainable business now so that I can go make the world a better place? You know, what's that path to either long-term funding or long-term profitability? And so I think that there's like a body of work that can be done there around, you know, like how do we help people see what the business is around the product? So as to say, you know, like when you've got your wallet, how can you actually layer services around this? Be it, you know, the usual open source model of just, I'm going to provide support, or you can help with hosting, or because it's Lightning, you're going to do liquidity type stuff and LSP operations. Like there's lots of different things that you could do. So for instance, you know, something like the loan arrangement stuff. Well, that loan arrangement that we talked about earlier, it needs a discovery area. So if you happen to run one of the better open source mobile wallets in Bitcoin, well, maybe one path to monetization is that you can create a discovery area. So you integrate with something like a Nostr protocol on top of that, and you say, right, we're gonna provide you offers for things to invest in, and we get X basis points off that. But because you've got this great popular wallet, now you have a path to profitability. Like I think there's a lot of these different services that could be integrated that we can actually give back to some of those developers and give them ways to like add little businesses to it. You know, one of the things that I was looking at was, I think I talked to you about this when we first talked, was I'm not a developer. I like to have ideas, but I can't execute them, and there's not necessarily the right people that I can work with locally to do it. And I thought, oh, it might be interesting to have almost like a service business that uses open source software, provides it, like helps people and facilitates it with users. And then as part of the profit share of that business, actually then sponsors that product that you use. And then you get that kind of nice symbiotic relationship where, like, yeah, you get to develop what you want. I then become like a paying consumer for you, and you get a stream of funds based off all of the consulting work that I do, because I use your product inside that consulting work. So again, I think like that sort of model you could flesh out, but I think there's a really rich design space there around, like, well, what are all the different ways that we could marry up the wallets and the various infrastructure that's been developed open source with these different sort of revenue streams over time, and actually just get some of these people some cash coming through that isn't, it can't always be donations, because donations won't always last, unfortunately. Like I think there's a space to address there. So I'll probably put out some calls for that at some point. So if anybody is interested, then I don't know, follow me on Twitter or something. No, I'll probably be talking more about it soon. Or Bitcoin is on the Bitcoin Design Guide. I've got a channel now, so feel free to jump onto the Slack.
You have a channel, a specific channel? Am I in that?
I don't know. A bunch of people. I only fired it up this week. This is a new thing.
What's that called?
It's called business models. It's looking at business models.
I'm learning new stuff here.
Get involved. Another one is we were kind of talking yesterday about the Fediment stuff. I that's a great, interesting intersection with the community banks. And I probably had one of my realizations the other day as to why it was interesting, which I don't know. I don't know how much people like it or think it's interesting, but like to me, it's all about the trust models inside it. Like Xiaomi and eCash is good because it's super private and it's super quick. And you can kind of do anything you want inside there because you don't have to deal with blockchains. Like, so that's great. But what I didn't get, I think until the other day, was just if you're a mint, or if you're a member of a mint in a Fedimint, you don't have to trust any other Fedimints, but you can still interact with them. And a merchant, if you can pay a merchant from your mint, and they don't need to know anything about it. And I think once I kind of I understood that, I got quite excited about these again. But maybe I can share some.
Yeah,
show please. You what I'm talking about. Let's see if I get the right screen. All right, does that come through?
Yeah.
All right, so the concept, I mean, you said I'll have like an explain it like I'm fine, but Fediments, what can I say to that?
Let me add context to that. Like, I think there's so many people that are excited, but also are like, I need to do more research, right? And so there's a lot of excitement. Like, you know, again, like I mentioned, like Obi and Eric did great talks at the open source stage at Bitcoin 2022. So I'd suggest anybody go watch it. But like for us to hop into jump into Fediment, like I'd love for you to give some of the basic, and then also what you're excited about.
So I think the way, so the what is the mint is, it's a shared custody arrangement where there's a small federation of members that control the funds, and they issue you an IOU against those funds, which is a Charmian eCash bearer certificate. So it really is like a cash analog. It's like you give me $1,000 of Bitcoin and I give you these certificates that basically go, you know, like $100, $100, $100, $100, $50, $50, $50, $10, $10, $10, and you can spend those. And some of the magic that's involved in that arrangement is that I don't know, say I'm the bank, I don't know who's got what notes. I just know that they're real notes. And so inside that little economy where that's used, they can just circulate and I can check and say like, yeah, somebody's given that note to somebody else. It's still all legit. It's the right amount of notes that I've issued. That's all cool, all good, but I just don't know who's got what. So it's a bit like a custodial wallet, only it's got no view of your balance and it doesn't know who you're paying. So you've solved a couple of really key problems with custodial wallets there. Now, in the Fedimint example, one of the things that they add is a Charmian mint used to be like a single person running the mint. They now have a multitude of people. So again, you do have this trust issue where you have to trust the federation with your funds. And so this is attacked in two ways. One is that there's now a federation where 2/3 of the people have to collude to steal the funds, which is still a little bit off-putting for Bitcoiners. And then the other piece, which is what I think really makes it tick, similar to the community banks, is the suggestion is you do this in a small community where there is actually an existing trust relationship that's going to stop them ripping you off anyway. So maybe you would have a Fedimint for your family. Like I could run one of these for my family and everybody else that wants to use it. Or you might have you could do one for a company, which sounds a bit crap because you think, well, I need to pay people that aren't in my company. So that's rubbish. But then what they've done on the FediMints is an integration with the Lightning Network, where you have each of these nodes as a mint can actually have the shared custody over the funds, where all the transactions are private and we don't know whose balance is what. But you can have these spread all over the place. And if you want to then pay somebody, you actually have LSPs that are part of that mint or gateways. So it's basically a user who has the ability to run a channel somewhere else can accept a FediMint transaction for the FediMint Bitcoins and then use that to pay a Lightning transaction. So if I go over here, I've got the flow. But you can imagine a situation where I'm a Lightning Network merchant. I'll be the merchant, you be the payer. You're in mint one over here, you're user two. So you've put money into this mint. So it's in a custodial on-chain, like federated multisig there. And what you've got is these FediMint tokens that I don't know anything about. So when you come to pay me, I send you an invoice. So obviously a Lightning invoice pays out on the presentation of the pre-image. And it gets back, right? There's like this hashed pre-image in there. Once you reveal that secret, it settles the payment across the chain on the Lightning Network. That same little secret you can use and say, okay, well, I'll pay you, Lightning provider, if you can get that secret. And the way he gets that secret is he pays the Lightning Network merchant. So he gets the secret, gives it to you. You pay him because he's got the secret, and then he gets his money back from there. So you can have this way of like trust minimized getting out of the Federation to pay other people just because there happens to be a broad network of Lightning providers. Well, interestingly, again, like whilst you might not run the mint for money, there's an interesting like business angle there. Say, well, you know, the commercial entity here is going to be the Lightning service provider. So it will make sense to be an LSP that's happy to accept these different FediMint coins and start to bridge all of these little networks. And so in the same way that you would have the Lightning Network, where you have, you know, this just overlay network of all of these different nodes that are settling payments amongst themselves, now any one of those nodes could be tens to hundreds to thousands of people. So you have a really good like scaling solution and private solution that's on top of the Lightning Network, almost acting not like a layer three is probably the wrong language because it's not tied to Bitcoin necessarily, but I think it's an interesting space to play in for that. But the big one for me was just kind of understanding that when I'm in a mint, I can't only transact in that mint. I actually do have the ability to get out quite easily. It works very simply. It's actually tied to the same sort of HDLC chain that makes Lightning Network payments work. So I can mitigate a lot of that trust. And yeah, I could see me using this for spending money.
But, that's awesome. How does this play into, so like maybe tying together our previous conversation about the P2P capital markets, is this suited to build that those P2P capital markets on top of this, or would you say more the sort of standard maybe community banking model, or how do you see those ideas interacting?
So I think the problems that it solves are it's in the custody and the payment aspect. So I don't think it changes the flow necessarily of the peer-to-peer capital markets piece, but what I would say is that something like Galois might be looking at something like this in a few years, because there's an interview with Eric Surian, who's the guy that invented or designed the FediMints, where he points out that, like, you know, custodians knowing your balance and where you're spending your money is not great, and it's bad. It's a damn, you know, your neighbors happen to run the bank and they know how much money you've got and where you've spent it. That could be much worse. Maybe it's better, maybe it's worse, but it's, you know, it's, there's somebody that can actually physically come to your house. So maybe it's better that they just don't know where your money is and where it's spent. And I'm all for financial privacy. So I think it makes sense to have that as your kind of custody engine, where you might previously have like a custodial solution. because it's effectively the same sort of pattern of saying like, okay, we've got a custodial wallet with all the funds. Instead of it being custodial, what we'll do instead is we'll just, instead of you having a balance on a database, we actually give you tokens that represent the money, if you know what I mean. It really is like getting little digital banknotes that are all individual. So I think that's an interesting model for that custody aspect, which I think is likely to be a part of banks. As I say, I mean, to me, when I think about community banks, I'm thinking more about like, well, what's the services that they can facilitate? But I think it would be, it's hard not to look at how the internet was built and think that there's not going to be some custodial aspects to Bitcoin in the future. So I think the better we can deal with those and make them, you know, certainly less invasive from a privacy endpoint, the better. Yeah, so I think that's where it would play in. It would be in the actual like custodial model. Now, there is an element that and the way that you do the derivatives and things. So inside a Fedi Mint, you can do any of the fancy, you know, it's again, it's a computer inside there that runs this little signing and can get the consensus algorithm. So you can have smart contracts if you want. You can do whatever you want inside that little consensus ball. Plus, you don't have a blockchain. So you don't have all the like the bloat of the data or the speed and the consensus stuff. So you can have assets and you know, various execution scripts and things that you could run amongst that federation as well. So it might be that it is a good place to then do, you know, maybe you can better separate out some of the tokens that would count for dollars, for instance, against a different set of funds that are hedged off somewhere else. And yeah, I think you might get a better ability to segment funds and things like that using assets inside that system as well. But that's maybe a little bit, not yet. Build the thing first and then let's see.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this, I think it's exciting to think about where this can end up, to think about where Fedi Mint and even the Galloway stack can interplay in the future. I know that Kamal, who's on the line here, we've had many conversations about that. It's really exciting. I know, you know, Eric has mentioned, there's something in terms of like as we see the custodial or you know, Bitcoin economy and Bitcoin Bank sort of idea extending into the future. It's like there's going to be many different methods for different types of communities, right? Like, you know, one of the things I think about as like, you know, for instance, like the Galloway stack. I was talking to you know, as met actually, you know, talking to somebody in a Chamber of Commerce and thinking about like, you know, today, you know, if you're sending money like down the hall in town hall, like you're like you're money leaving the building, going to the bank, coming back around, right? But like, you know, the community banking model in Bitcoin is really, you know, almost think of it as like sovereignty at the organizational level as well, right? So as an organization, as a town, we are sovereign, right? We have a governance model, we have keys, we have, right? And then the individual who can also use our wallet for whichever reasons or whatever value we provide to them for using our wallet, right? Whether it's investing in the local community and all the things we've been talking about, is up to them. And they also can be self-sovereign by using a non-custodial solution, obviously, to store, you know, majority of their funds and stuff like this. And so it's just exciting to see like, you know, how the sets or the different you know, economy built out.
Yeah, definitely. I know when I think of again, like the community banks, to me it's like whether a bank is sort of good or bad, because I know it's saying like, oh, I quite like community banks and Bitcoin, and people just say you like banks. It's evil, we don't like banks. And I say no, it differs on sort of, you know, scope and scale. And the scale aspect we talked about earlier, right? It's like there's a massive difference between four banks and 4,000 banks, you know, and the incentives change drastically in that world. And I think you'll find that the banks are actually more about how do I help you as a consumer and how do I help help you do something, or it could be that you just are your own bank. And again, whenever I say bank, it doesn't mean you've given up your money. It's just that you might be the bank for yourself if you can do
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
But there, I think there is a recognition that like you don't have to be a bank. You can also be like your grand's bank. Like I think that Uncle Jim style model of Bitcoin is something that we kind of need to take a bit more seriously. It's just like it's great if everybody can run their own node. What's a shame is that it's actually quite hard for me to run a node for others. You know, like if we can nail that, it becomes easier. So I think that, you know, these community banks are often more just people put together. But yeah, like that, I guess that was the like the scale aspect of the banks is just, you know, it's not four, it's 4,000. And then the scope aspects are, you know, it's not just give me your money and I'm going to do what I want with it. It's actually my money now. Ha ha ha. It's no, I think that
there is no money.
It's your money. It's probably still going to stay your money most of the time. Like it's, I think there's going to be less custodial relationships. I think we'll make ways to make it so I, you know, maybe I can take partial custody of the money as the bank sometimes, but it's largely going to be your own. What's going to be interesting is what are the services that you might need that are very real services around, like how do I get loans, or you know, how do I have saving plans, or how do I lend against something, or how do I make payments and facilitate them easier, or how do I get support in dealing with my money? You know, maybe the whole banking industry goes the Red Hat model. And it's just like a support desk for people that are trying to get stuff done in Bitcoin. I think that'd be quite a reasonable place for it to end up. But, you know, I think there's ways that we can use, you know, like many distributed businesses to actually make the Bitcoin experience better. And I think that's a good thing. We should do that. And we should charge money for it. And then we should give that money for such project. That's my
that's a nice closing closing thought. And we're I think probably at a good runtime. I want to give you maybe a few minutes to either sort of pitch sort of what you're up to, tell people where to find you, and or touch on any like maybe agenda items that we skipped. So I'll kind of give you the floor and then I can round us out.
Like the intro, this is probably one of those areas where I think my wife's going to bed. This is one of those areas where I hadn't considered what I would say. The best place to follow, if any of this is interesting, just hit me up on Twitter. So I'm Pete_Win because I'm bad at OPSEC. So and I think on various Telegram groups or Slack groups, I've pretty much got the same name. So yeah, go there. I do have a website, bitcoinforhumans.com. Feel free to look in there. I've got various articles and videos and things that I've produced over the last few months where I was just trying to explain various concepts in Bitcoin. I'll probably be doing a bit more on there as well. And yeah, I'll put links to GitHub and anything else that I'm working on. Yeah, Twitter's always the easiest place, isn't it? So Pete_Win.
It is. Follow Pete_Win. Yeah, I mean, as folks who are watching this or will watch this, will probably glean, I think that you bring an interesting angle to the space, and also one that as the community of, you know, not just devs and designers, but also sort of people who are, you know, understanding the markets, understanding how to architect solutions. You laid out stable bond, the way you laid out the market. some of the fundamental understanding. I think Twitter and GitHub, and also adopting Bitcoin is adopting BTC. Again, we have a Lightning Summit coming up in El Salvador in November. So that is where a lot of these types of conversations that we're having on a weekly basis kind of culminate into, 1,500 people in a place for a few days, working on stuff and sharing ideas, and obviously visiting Bitcoin Beach. So we'll see you there, Pete. Thank you. And everybody, thanks for listening.